don't be afraid to kind of go out there and ask for help, because it's in asking for help. There's nothing wrong in asking for help.
The Interpreting Wine Hospitality Summit was recorded in September 2020, with the world recovering from the global pandemic and the hospitality sector still particularly challenged. Allow me, Interpreting Wine founder Lawrence Francis, to be your guide to this series of 7 episodes featuring some of the UK's most respected voices discussing the impacts of the pandemic on food, wine, cocktails, bars, retail, and events. Listen, share ideas, and reconnect during this 4-day virtual summit held across web, podcast, and social media. Please do share content and ideas using the hashtag IWSummit, and encourage anyone who might be interested to sign up at interpretingwine.com/summit. Welcome to day 4, session 2 of the Interpreting Wine Hospitality Summit 2020. All good things must come to an end, and so it is with the summit. 4 days of fantastic talks, ideas, and positivity from some of the leading lights in wine, restaurants, cocktails, and retail. And what better way to close out than welcoming back Dawn Davies, MW of the Whiskey Exchange. Now a record-holding Interpreting Wine guest making her 4th appearance. We start with an update about how buying habits have changed since we last spoke in March. We talk trend spotting, both in the way that customers buy and how they are experimenting with new products and brands. Virtual tastings and their increased popularity during lockdown. Before Dawn gives us a virtual tour of the 100% Virtual Whiskey Show 2020, the tech, the tasting, and the spirits, the differences between the wine and spirits world in their approach to virtual. She offers advice to those working in the service sector who might be struggling at this time. And she finishes looking back at the 3 successful charity auctions she helped organise earlier in the year. Enjoy.
Hi, Lawrence. It's great to be back. Thank you for having me again. I mean, I'm super honoured. It's always fun chatting to you. And
yeah, my pleasure.
It feels like every time we chat, something else crazy has happened. Since the last time we talked, you know, we've kind of, well, we talked at the beginning of March, which of course was the lockdown started, and you know, we were just chatting just now and laughing about me sort of freaking out around selling Famous Grouse, Fever Tree, and high ABV spirits. And you know, that was, you know, I think what we've just gone through is will be unprecedented in our lifetime, and mm-hmm. You know, I think it's kind of it's been such a roller coaster for all of us in terms of emotion, in terms of sort of mental health, in terms of just kind of being able to do things. And you know, it's been probably one of the most challenging years of my life, for sure. You know, and it's full of highs, it's full of lows, and mm-hmm. I think actually it's that mentality that just says, you know, keep on trucking, or you know, as my mom would say, you know, keep on trucking. And I think, you know, it's been interesting watching kind of how the pandemic has changed people's buying habits. And I don't know if you know, but my original university degree was social anthropology. And so I've kind of been watching this. It's probably the most interesting social anthropology study ever. I wish I could go back and do my thesis now, because I would be like, I would have walked away with like, what is it? Like a first degree as opposed to not so great first. And, you know, I think it's been super interesting. So we saw this kind of this kind of panic mentality in the same way as we saw with toilet paper with and stuff, of people just buying stuff because they couldn't get hold of it in supermarkets. And and then that kind of evened out. And then it was great because then you just really started to see what people were drinking. and what they were doing in their homes. I mean, it always felt like I was in their houses because, you know, suddenly I was seeing all these wine sales go through. Like, so we brought in 60 new wines into the portfolio, most of them under £15, which was insane. You know, I was like, we turned into the wine exchange. My dreams have come true.
Finally, yeah, you know, you can take the girl out of wine.
Yeah, I'm taking the girl out of wine. And, you know, so we had this kind of wine culture. And it was really exciting because people weren't just buying Malbec. Of course they were. I mean, they were buying Malbec. They were buying Pinot Grigio. But then I had some quirky grapes on, and I had some really interesting little things. Like I had a kind of skin contact orange wine from, I can't remember, it's probably Slovenia or something. And people were going crazy for it. And I was like, this is fantastic. You know, and it was really, really nice to see that people weren't just trying. You know, people got really adventurous in lockdown. And that was so exciting for me as a buyer to see that. And the cocktail kind of thing happened. Like everyone's suddenly, first it was Negronis. I was like, why have we sold so much Campari and Martini? Hold on. It's pretty much an even ratio of Campari and Vermouth de Torino from Cocchi and Martini Rosso. I'm like, they're making Negroni. And then suddenly sort of we saw Angostura spike, and I'm like, okay. And it was so interesting. You know, people went into Old Fashions. They went into Manhattan. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then the daiquiri kind of made a resurgence. I was like, what is going on here? Around Day of the Dead, suddenly we were seeing margarita going crazy. My favorite one, though, was one of my top-selling products in summer was Coco Lopez, which is the canned cocoa coconut. Now, either a butt ton of pina coladas were going out over summer, or I don't know what people were doing with that, but there was, I mean, we're talking thousands of cans of Coco Lopez.
Wow.
It's been such an interesting study. And, you know, gradually people are going back to their old habits and buying, you know, the good whiskeys and the limited edition stuff and things like that. But, you know, for the first 4 months, I would say, I was literally having to react every day to some new trend.
And it is so interesting, and I guess this is one of the big things, really, and one of the big advantages of doing online, because I guess that's kind of baked into the cake, isn't it? You get to see that back end, and you get to see where the spikes are, and get immediate feedback, and get to immediately, you know, putting on your anthropological brain, get to sort of look in there. But do you, as the whiskey exchange, really, do you get any insight into the why? I mean, are people going onto your site, looking at blogs, looking at content, and that's sort of what's driving that, or do you think that actually the sort of motivation is coming from something elsewhere?
I think it's a really interesting question. And you know, I've always been bricks and mortar when I was Selfridges. And, of course, I'm still bricks and mortar. Now we have three stores.
Yeah.
And, you know, always before, it was very easy to kind of get a feel for what a customer's doing, because when you were talking to them, they would be like, oh, you know, Joe Bloggs told me about that, or, oh, I read that, or, oh, this looked really good. And, you know, you had this real idea of where these trends were coming from. And I do a lot of trend work. It's kind of one of the big things I do in my job. And what was really interesting was, like, you were kind of making suppositions. I mean, I think I was pretty much on the money, but, you know, you kind of look at these sales and, you know, sometimes it's obvious. Sometimes it's because, you know, Jim Murray's released his whiskey Bible and spikes happen for that.
Yeah.
Or sometimes, you know, Serge has written a really great review on a product and you get a search, you know. So if it's a review or something, it's much easier. Sometimes it's an influencer. So you can kind of see if we follow sort of key influencers and just, you know, you can see spikes after that. Or, you know, maybe it's been on Saturday Kitchen or something. So there's single product spikes that are quite easy to identify. I think it's when you see these multiple product trends, which is more a category trend or a much more kind of more broad trend, that you have to really understand and decipher the numbers and really be be on top of what's happening. And, you know, for us, we would prefer to drive the trend than to sit and wait for it to happen. We very, very much did that with rum. We're working on bitters. We're seeing that bitters is going to become really, really interesting to the consumer. And I think, you know, that's something Calvados, you know, we're going hell for leather on that because we know that that's going to come around. And so I think, you know, it's for us, it's all about leading those trends. So if we identify something that we think is a trend, then we'll go after it big time. So that's when, yes, we'll do blog posts, we'll do tastings, we'll do social media around it, really kind of getting to it. So we own that category. So when that comes, we're ahead of the curve. But yeah, I think with lockdown, it was just such a different thing because the trends were happening so quickly.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Had to be. I mean, really, really for me, the thing that kind of separated the men from the boys or the girls from the women or whatever you want to say, to be gender neutral or gender specific. It was, you know, that kind of reaction. You had to lead the pack and you had to react super quickly to everything. And I think the people that sort of sat back and were like, we're not going to put any money behind anything. We're not going to go after things because we just don't know what's going to happen. They're going to lose this race. You know, you had to go out and have balls and just not be afraid to do things. And, you know, a couple of times I was like, I'm just going rogue. I'm going rogue. And we just did stuff. And I think it was super important to be able to do that and have that reaction time and not care. Just do it. You know, I always say, just AFDI it.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, it's so interesting. I think, you know, again, it's all, as you say, it's all about sort of suppositions. But I guess if you've got the data there, you can kind of make that. And it sounds as though that. I don't know, the word that sort of comes to mind is like cabin fever, you know, and people are kind of, you know, they couldn't get out, they, you know, their favorite bars weren't open, and they were able to I guess get that satisfaction or scratch that itch, you know, by taking it at home, and I guess as well, you know, there's also now just so much more content in terms of just YouTube, you know, even if the content is not coming from the brands, you know, you've I think rightly brought up the influencers, and you think about, you know, the drinks influencers, and now I think, you know, this level of content that they're making, I think people have got that added level of confidence to just get out there and, you know, get into the kitchen and kind of whip up whatever they're missing from their normal bar experience.
Yeah, and it's been really interesting. Actually, one of my friends, one of the girls that used to work with me at Selfridges and then came here to be my buyer with me for a while and is now at Fortnum's. I remember I used to tell her off all the time for not cooking properly at home. You know, like she used to eat out all the time. And like her idea of cooking was putting a piece of salmon in the oven and with maybe some potato, and that was it. She never like did a salad dressing. She never did. Mm-hmm. And she was posting all these pictures of like, all these amazing dishes she was cooking. And I was like messaging her going, Katie, what's gone on? And she's like, I don't know what else to do and I can't go out. And
yeah.
I think people really kind of got into that sort of spirit of creating. And I think actually one thing that will be very positive to come out of COVID is that people had to start thinking and people had to start being creative and people had to start reimagining. And you know, I think we've been so used to being drip-fed ideas, drip-fed this, drip-fed that. Actually, the people were going out there just getting ideas and becoming very, very super creative. Whether that's just cooking a meal at home, making a cocktail, playing around with some bitters, or, you know, just kind of experimenting with different wines or different styles of product. I think, you know, that's been a really positive to come out of COVID and something that I hope doesn't go away. And I hope that we see that. And actually, we're seeing it more bars. I went to Artesian a week ago. And what was amazing is I was talking to Anna Sebastian, who's absolutely legendary over there. And she was like, what's been really nice is we're not putting any brands on menus at the moment because it's allowing us to not just have to do the big brands, but actually hero some of the small guys. And Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be really interesting, is how does that now translate into bars? Are we going to have bartenders that are not just going after money, money, money from the big boys and really kind of looking at the provenance and the product of the spirit? And, you know, I'm really hoping that we become more aware ethically and, you know, responsible about who we're supporting in terms of brands. And, mm-hmm. and you know, I think that hopefully will change. And I feel that that's going to be a movement that is going to come through into the industry, because the big brands aren't spending the budgets now. So, you know, mm-hmm. it means mm-hmm. be a bartender and actually pour some really good stuff.
Yeah, 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 it's exactly. And as you say, it's I guess all of these if that is a trend, if that is another sort of movement, then, you know, I guess now is the time, I guess, to get kind of get out there and experience that. And what I'm just also on this theme, really, I'm really taken back to something you mentioned last time again, because just double checking the date, it was right at the end of March. So it was, you know, right in the sort of the eye of the storm, if you like. And I do remember that the Whiskey Exchange was really selling and you know, was sort of distributing packs from London bars which weren't able to be open at the time. And I'm just curious, you know, that because I guess in a sense, are those kind of ideas potentially in conflict, you know, that sort of let me just get a serve from Lackey Lane for, you know, I think that was one of the bars that you mentioned, and let me just sort of have that prepared by them and sort of have that sort of bar experience, really, where it's them doing the mixing versus, you know, I think what you've been really describing early on, at least in our conversation, has been that kind of do it yourself element. You see those sort of competing or sort of people maybe getting into both, or yeah, just your thoughts on how those coexist.
I think it's a bit of both. I think it's, you know, so the first thing we did was doing the bar bundles, which meant you made it at home, but you had all the recipes and the ingredients from the guys, which I think, you know, was a really nice way of just kind of saying, look, these guys, a percentage of this goes to the bar, blah, blah, blah. Now what we're seeing is a lot of the bars doing their own at-home cocktails, which I think my consumer's not quite there yet. You know, I'd love them to be, because I think there's a slight issue here with all these bars that are doing that, and I understand 100% why they're doing it, because, you know, it's one way of them to keep communicating with their customer, keep moving forward. And I think it works if you've got a local consumer that is loyal to you and you can deliver to them. I think it's less relevant when you start putting on a platform like ours. And we have tried, you know, I mean, some of my favorites are the Terra Elementary ones. I think they're absolutely outstanding. But our consumers just don't quite get them yet. So, you know, it's been really hard, and a lot of bars have approached me, and I'd love to be able to do it, but also the quality mm-hmm. not there is mm-hmm. there as well. I think mm-hmm. you know, people need to be a lot more aware of that they've got to have produced ambient stable products that have at least 6 months shelf life, that they need to have licensing, and they need to do it properly. And it's you know, in the beginning we were a bit laissez-faire about it, but now I think we're like, hold on a second, guys, you know, we can't take everything. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'd love to be able to support everyone and do it, but there's no point in me taking product that's not going to sell, because that harms them. And it, when we have to discount to clear, you know, yeah. It's really important that we. And I don't know if the consumer is ever really going to get that bottle cocktail experience. I just think until the quality is really spot on, and you know, there's only so many Negronis one can have on one's list. I think it's a complicated one. I think that trend is not there. I don't think it may ever be there. I think people do love going out to bars, or actually they are enjoying making it themselves. And and I think maybe sometimes they don't really understand it if it's too weird and wacky. And some of the ones I've seen have been a little out there. And it's fine when you're in a bar and you're in the atmosphere and they've made the drink properly. The right temperature, with the right garnish, with the whole kind of theater. But when you're at home and you just pour it over ice or what have you, or you've got it chilled, and it's just not quite the same. You know, there's something that I think what these bottle cocktails don't do is they don't replicate the theater of a cocktail. Mm-hmm. You know, because mm-hmm. look at a beautiful glass or the beautiful surroundings, or, you know, the bartender coming to you and explaining what they've done with the cocktail. You know, that you cannot replicate with a bottle cocktail.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's I think that's super interesting, and I think that will be super helpful for any bartenders that are listening, or you know, people, because it's I think there's been maybe, yeah, I guess a move, and it's great to want to try lots of different things, but I don't know, I was of the view that it might not be, you know, you give a bottle cocktail a try, it might not actually be that ends up sort of being the thing, but it might be something you learn. You might learn something from doing that. It might be something you learn from design, or
if you're launching a brand, you can't launch it rushed. And I think a lot of people went out there and just did it rushed. And, you know, I think that's where the danger lies, because you could damage your brand more than you can help it. And, you know, it takes a long time to get packaging right. And especially if you're trying to sell something online, I think, you know, if you're keeping it local and you're going around and you're selling to people in your area that know you and love you, then fill your boots, do it. You know, I think it's a great concept, but I think it just doesn't work on a larger scale. You know, and a lot of our customers are not London. So they may not know the bars that are there. Yeah. So you've got to kind of think about it. We're very London centric in our thoughts sometimes because we live here, but you know, we have a much more global audience, and you know, you've got to bear that in mind. So packaging is super key online. It's got to look good. So many products I look at and I think, my God, you know, I'd love to take that on, but your packaging is absolutely shite. You know, it's not going to sell. Bam. Could be the best brand in the world, could be the best liquid in the world. Not going to sell. And, you know, I think it's hard. Like, someone emailed me the other day. They're like, I don't understand why you won't take on our product. It's great liquid. And I'm like, I haven't even tried it. There's no point in me trying it because your packaging is just so horrendous.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Look.
Yeah. And I think it's that whole, one of the largest categories, I guess you'd say, of videos now on YouTube are unboxings, and you know, it's has to be part of the experience, you know, just the way that a package arrives and the way that people feel when they touch the paper and when they hold the package up to the light and when they first open the envelope and what happens and how things are presented, you know, it all
clearly
matters.
No one's quite like me who opens a package and like rips everything open and is just so excited for what's in there. It's part of the theater. I always like to reference back to Selfridges because I think they just do that so beautifully. I mean, they're the leaders in it. And, you know, you get that box and it's brown on the outside and you open it and then this beautiful, bright Pantone 109C, everyone, yellow kind of appears. And, I mean, Selfridges are by far and away, and actually Fortnum's are incredible. Mm-hmm. You and Ben have done an amazing job over there. You know, like, it's that theater. It's that sense of gift to self, gift to other. You know, we all like a gift to self. My God, yeah. You know, it's one of the most important gifts we give anything. and that's it. That's theater. You know, if you're an online retailer, you have to create theater in some way. And, you know, part of that packaging is, you know, I think what we've done in COVID actually has been really fundamental to us moving forward in a game-changing way as an online retailer, because we've actually put ourselves out there and become faces, not just a platform that you click and we look great and everything's nice. Now we actually are putting faces to who we are, with all these virtual tastings, with all these Instagram kind of things that we've been doing with myself and Billy. You know, we've really kind of said, you know, there's a reason we're as good as we are, and it's because we have people behind us that have knowledge and have passion, and I hope that's starting now to kind of bring fruit into giving us new consumers, because, you know, we're really kind of going out there and capturing that virtual kind of consumer, because there's a person, you know, we go to a store, we go to a bar because we like the people we serve. You know?
This is super interesting, because I think the two elements that I I really had put down wanting to talk about. One was retail, which I think, you know, we're really sort of digging into now. But then also, you know, wanted to end up at the virtual show and of course, give people a preview of what's come out with the shows, plural. But I think you've actually, you know, pro as ever. I think you've given a kind of the perfect bridge, really, in terms of, you know, what has the virtual event space kind of individual consumer, you know, what does that look like for you in terms of growing over COVID? Was that something that was on the radar sort of for the last couple of years, and that sort of, and the COVID has sort of brought that, accelerated that implementation, and, you know, what's been going on, what have you seen, and what have you sort of, what's been your approach really to that virtual tasting space?
You know, it's really a funny, and it's an interesting one, because I remember when I first joined here, I said, because I was so used to bricks and mortar and having my staff as the personalities, and we have amazing staff, but I came here and I said, we have so many amazing people in this building. I mean, the knowledge in this building is second to none in the world in terms of retail. I mean, you can ask anyone of our staff something, someone will be an expert in it. You know, I was saying last night, I was on a chat, and I said, you know, you can ask about beer to wine to baijiu. Someone in this building will have knowledge that will be impeccable on it. And that's something that we should have always been heroing, is the people behind who we are. Because the reason we are the specialists that we are is the people. And not just the buying, you know, not at all. I'm not saying me, but, you know, Sukhinder's knowledge on whiskey is phenomenal, on spirits, full stop. Billy knows beer, baijiu, sake, whiskey. I've got a guy in one of my shops that, like, ask me anything about gin, he'll tell you. Like, there's someone that will be able to give you some piece of information. And I think that that's something that I felt was always lacking, is that we didn't put any names forward. We didn't really hero our people. Mm-hmm. And I was really frustrated by that. And we started doing a little bit. So Billy and I had been doing some videos over Christmas for our top 10s and stuff, just kind of talking about the product and things. And then when kind of COVID happened, I was like, Billy and I were like, okay, we just got to get in this space. Because we start talking to our customers. There's no other way we can talk to them. We have no more shows. We have no more, you know, face-to-face in stores. How do we connect to them? Mm-hmm. And the obvious was, is to go out there and do these virtual tastings. And, you know, the first couple, I think the Cognac show was the first one we did properly. And we were just astounded by the reaction. And so I think Billy and I have probably been on a Zoom at least once a week, one of us, since doing tastings. I did two back-to-back last night. We did Black Top 24 Hours, which I think was just revolutionary in the scene. I think you can go out and do virtual, and I think people were doing virtual, but I think we took it one step further with, you know, our perfect measure packs, so you could actually taste along with us, because we already had them in play anyway, which was great. In terms of the quality of what we were doing, you know, the professionals and the slickness of it. I mean, Billy's amazing on anything tech. So, you know, everything looked perfect. I would have just been like, yeah, play. And, you know, I think then when we came to 24 hours, we just really wanted to break a mold. I think it's very easy just to do a tasting or a talk on a Zoom or on any platform, StreamYard or what have you. But I think with 24 hours, we were like, we want to just do something crazy and insane and out there. And I don't think anyone else would sit up 24 hours and talk rum ever, you know. But again, you know, that was kind of groundbreaking. And I think what we've done is we've taken that virtual platform and we've accelerated it, and we've really owned the space. And I am very, very excited for Whiskey Show, because I was gutted when I had to cancel Whiskey Show. Like, I've been looking forward to it. All my customers have been looking forward to it. My suppliers have been looking forward to it. And I was like, I just don't want to do a series of Zooms or StreamYards. That's what the consumer wants anymore. They're getting bored of it. So we actually, interestingly enough, we'd already been looking at virtual platforms, conference platforms, because I decided very early on into COVID that I wanted to hedge my bets and I wanted to have a virtual element to Whiskey Show, whatever happened, because I just felt I was going to lose a lot of my overseas customers, some of my older customers. So, you know, this was a way of kind of bridging that gap.
Yeah.
So we actually went through, we were looking at a load of platforms, and actually quite funny because we were like looking at ones, and I mean, I was having avatars bumping into things. I couldn't move my avatar. I was like, these look great, but I can't use it. I mean, if I can't use it, there's going to be a hell of a lot of people that can't use it either. And we found a platform called Hopin, which we love. They've been really great about developing stuff with us as well. You know, they've really worked with us. I think they're an amazing platform. And it's simple. It's easy to use. It looks great. So you can actually go into exhibitor booths. You can come onto the platform with them and have a face-to-face chat. You can chat on the side if you don't want to be on video. You know, we have stages. We have session stages. You know, what started off with 35 tasting packs is now over 200 talks and tastings.
Wow.
Over a week. I can honestly, hand on heart, say this is the most comprehensive whiskey show in the world. Hand on heart. I mean, it is absolutely, you know, the talks, you know, from 101s with Billy talking just about, you know, introductions to whiskey, to whiskey and popcorn pairings, to, you know, geeking out about worm tubs and sustainability in the industry and legislation and sulfur. I mean, I just looked at the schedule the other day and I'd seen our schedule. I mean, our schedule just from my side, from what Billy and myself and Dave are doing, we're doing over 70 talks over a week. And
you personally are doing
me, Billy and Dave Broom are doing, so I think Dave's doing about 20 something, Billy's doing about 25, and I'm doing 30. It's incredible. And then the brands were amazing. They've really embraced this and they've come up with some absolutely fantastic topics and fun things. And I mean, I'm just looking at this schedule thinking I'm going to have to repost this because we're going to have to do a second whiskey show just to replay all the content we've done with the first whiskey show. No one can have a chance to go through it. And, you know, if you're a whiskey geek, if you're a spirits geek, you know, rum's on there, of course rum's on there, you know, my passion for rum. This is the, if you're going to watch one more virtual thing, this is the only show to watch. It's insane.
And to be fair, I wouldn't have expected anything less. And, you know, I was on your preview where you showed the platform and I was super impressed because you had yourself as the host of one room and simultaneously there were these two other events happening and panel discussions and I guess the idea would be that they would be taste along events really in the whiskey show proper. But just to, because it, you know, I'm loving all of the tech and just the complexity and just, you know, how everything seems to have just come together, and as you say, to digitize something like the Whiskey Show and bring the punters along with you, I think it's phenomenal. But what I want to sort of flip it a little bit, really, just because I was trying, actually last night I was trying to explain what you were doing, and I got a little bit overwhelmed trying to explain it. So I'm just curious, like, is the when you get to something that's that comprehensive, I would say. I think you know, you can, it is complex, but it's comprehensive. It, you know, I'm sure you've got all the bases covered, and as you say, literally kind of from the ground up. I mean, talk to me as though, or talk about, I guess, a consumer path through this. Is, you know, imagine, you know, of course, when we go and when I went to the front door of the Whiskey Exchange proper last year and in person last year, you know, I was given a map. I was given a sort of, I guess that my route around that show had been thought out. So, yeah, what might what might my route be around this whiskey exchange? Have you kind of, you know, designed what might be a way to enjoy this and not to get overwhelmed, I guess, and get the most out of it?
Absolutely. And that's been kind of one of the challenges, especially when we started seeing all the things that the brands were doing, which has been super hard to kind of really. And I think, you know, there's a big learn here as well. You know, we're going where no man's gone before. And, you know, there's going to be some mistakes made along the way. And you've got to take those risks. That's, you know, why we're game leaders. And, you know, I think the thing is that so. It was a very complicated thing. Okay, how do we navigate this as a consumer? You know, because even me, I'm not techie at all. So I can't kind of guess in a way, because the events team, none of us are techie. We were kind of looking at it like, how do we do this? How do we see it? So the first thing that we've done, so when you buy your ticket, whiskeyshow.com people, you get sent a thing, you get a promotional code. So any tasting packs that we do, you get £10 off immediately if you're a show ticket holder. And we have over 100 different packs, be it brand packs, be it packs that are kind of there to go along with the talks and sessions. In terms of the schedule, I've just finished it into our side, which was incredible. So on the Whiskey Show, there's a list of all the schedules. And eventually, in the next sort of week, we'll have those linking to the tasting packs so you can go through, and whether it's a pack, you can go into it and buy that pack. And we're just kind of trying to break it down as much as possible. With the packs, what we wanted to do is just really kind of segregate it out into different sections. So, you know, you weren't just scrolling through these packs and thinking, oh my God, you know, there's over 100 packs. Where do I start? If I'm a beginner, where do I look? So, you know, we have one that's kind of your beginner session. We have one that's your geek session. We have one that we're sort of calling just for fun. One that talks all about the brands. So if you go onto the Whiskey Show, or if you go onto the whiskeyexchange.com, in the virtual show banner, those packs are all broken out into kind of, I guess, themes. So we have a Discover Scotland theme. We have a World Series theme. We have an Independent Bottlers theme. So it makes it very easy if you're sort of Joe Bloggs and you know what kind of level you're on, or you know what you're interested in, just to go in and see those packs and then say, okay, yes, I can see on the schedule it's here, here, and here. So when you've sort of bought your packs and everything, you'll be sent, you'll get your link to the actual show and your pass in. When you arrive at show, you'll hit the main stage, well, the main page, and to the sidebar, you have your stages, your exhibitors, and your sessions. So the main stage is where we'll be doing most of our panel talks and some of our kind of highlight tastings. And then the sessions are very much more the sort of very simple, less kind of complex tastings, where it's maybe Billy just doing a 101 or me talking about rye, you know. Yeah. So those are more simple things. And then you'll have all the brands doing their stages and sessions and talks. And again, that's all plotted out. So it starts on the 2nd of October at, my gosh, is it 4 o'clock? I can't remember anymore, till 9 p.m. And then the rest of the week, it's 11 a.m. until 9 p.m. at night. So, you know, it doesn't matter where in the world you are, you can still join. If you don't have tasting packs, you can still join because the content is so rich. There's so much information there. And, you know, you can go, and what's nice about the consumer, for the consumers, you can actually have a little bit of a play, you know, just pick away. You know, I think there's no hard and fast rule. It's not like when you walk into a show and you think, oh my God, I have to go taste that dream dram over there. You know, unless you specifically want to join a session, you can go into different booths and see what they've got. So some may just have videos playing and talk a little bit about brand. Some of the guys on the exhibition booths might be there and you can ask them questions, or they might be running a live session or, you know, and I looked at how we were building the booths the other day, and it's simple. It's a banner that says Johnny Walker, and you click on it and then you can go explore Johnny Walker, and there may be someone answering questions. They may say, okay, we're doing a session on this stage or what have you. So as a customer, you can really, and you can dip in and out of things. If you join something, you think, oh God, that was a bit boring. You can just go. You don't need to wait for the class to finish. You know, if I'm talking crap and you don't want to listen to me anymore, you can go. Yeah. You know, and no one's going to.
Walk of shame.
You can ask questions in chat if you were on Zoom. Yeah. You can join some of them. If you request to go on stage, if we feel it's relevant, we'll allow you on stage with us to ask questions. You know, you can chat with other people, so you can invite people to have little chats. So if your friends are all in, over the world, and then go and jump on a call with them face to face. So I guess for us, it was the closest thing we could do to physically being together. You know, that whole thing. And it's actually quite a simple platform. I think the ones we were looking at were super complex, and I think that would have been too much for everyone. Whereas this is just, you know, have a click around.
Yeah.
And you'll find us. You'll find us. We'll be doing stuff. And everything will be recorded. Yeah. All of the sessions and all the main stage is going to be recorded. So if you miss something and you're a ticket holder, we'll either be playing it throughout the week on our stages or on the brand stages, or we'll be able to give you access to it afterwards. So, you know, I hope we've covered some of the bases.
Well, that's phenomenal, you know, and I think, you know, I'm excited because you, Dawn, and you, Whiskey Show, and you, Whiskey Exchange, and as you say, you know, I know how well you guys do these things and how much you think about them and you nail them. You just get on, and you know, it's that kind of leading from the front, but not using that as an excuse to kind of, you know, do things half-assed either. It's like you're leading from the front, but still wanting to nail it and still kind of holding each other to a really high standard. I'm just sort of in awe, really, because I think, you know, I don't want to sort of knock the other side too much, you know, the wine side, but I'll be honest, you know, a lot of the things that I'm picking up from the wine side is, you know, COVID is here, let's cancel it, you know,
and you can't do that.
Yeah,
you know, we thought about champagne, we've had to cancel the champagne show, but I'm still going to do it virtually, and I'm going to use half bottles where I can. I'm going to get panels talking about champagne. You know, you don't have to. You think outside the box, go different, you know. There's a solution to everything. You just got to put your mind to it. You know, I we can still engage with people even if we can't taste together.
Yeah. And I don't know, am I being unfair there, or are you seeing a difference on the sort of spirits side and the wine side where there is maybe for the larger events, I guess, and for the scheduled events, a temptation to cancel them because they can't be held safely physically, and maybe it's more the brands that are kind of stepping up on the wine side and are doing brand-led initiatives rather than sort of, you know, large trade show-led initiatives?
I think people are starting to try. And I mean, I think what the guys have done at Pall Mall is fantastic. You know, I've done one of their tastings and I was uber impressed. You know, wine has a slight difficulty that spirits don't, as they can't really, in the same way as we can send all these small little bottles up to the bottler. You know, you can't do that in the same way as wine. And I think what Pall Mall have done has been really, really groundbreaking. And I think they've done an excellent job. I think the wine world could learn a lot from the spirit world. I have said this quite a lot of times. You know, I sit in both camps, I can see both camps. And I think there shouldn't be a snobbery around it. I think learn from where you can. You know, I say the same to the spirit world. Look at the wine world for certain things. You know, in terms of quality of production and in terms of oak use and in terms of control of sulfur. In the same way as I say to the spirit world, the wine world, look to spirits in terms of marketing, in terms of packaging, in terms of innovation, because they are the leaders. And you know, we all have our place and we're all the same. You know, wine and spirits is the same. I sit in both. I can tell you that for free. I'm one of the few people that can, but anyone else like Mimi Campbell, the guys at the WSET, you know, all of us are that sit in that camp between wine and spirits. We know how close they are. It's just we need everyone else to come together and understand that it's not about one being better than the other. Just some are better at some things and some are better at others. And that's where the wine world could learn a lot from spirits is just that kind of go out there and really kind of push boundaries. I think in wine, we're very staid sometimes. And, you know, I think there are people that are doing things. People are doing, Tim Atkins doing a lot of these kind of pop-up tastings, Susie and Peter are doing a lot of pop-up kind of tastings and talks and things. So So I think the wine world is doing stuff. I think they're just not maybe going it with as much aggression as the spirit world.
And I think you are the person for me that comes to mind as best is not the right adjective, but just the person, I guess, that moves between those two sides with the most ease, I would say, and maybe has the most sort of respect on kind of both sides of the fence, if you like. But actually, just hearing you thinking there, and I think it's relevant for the Whiskey Show Virtual as well. But I was completely blown away by that when I went to interview Mark Rainier, because he is somebody that's come very much steeped in wine, from that wine background, from the bottling background to really understanding the production, really having those relationships with the producers, and it will never sort of leave me. That was the thing that he reinforced to me with the project of Waterford, is that he's making a whiskey for wine drinkers and really bringing in all of those different techniques and tradition and history and craftsmanship that you do have in abundance in wine, but bringing it into a 2020 setting and using technology to display provenance and to really kind of bring that to the fore. And I understand that he's going to be one of your headlines. Yes. For this year, so I'm super excited about that.
Yeah, he's one of our guests, and I did two talks with Mark because I couldn't actually get him to stop talking, so I actually had to do two sessions with him. But that's what, with Whiskey Show, we've tried to do is we're actually not just bringing whiskey people in; we're trying to bring people from different disciplines. We're doing something about terroir and spirits, and does terroir exist in spirits? And we have Daniele Biondi from Velier. Steve Olson, who I'm super excited to have on, from Del Maguey, and then we're doing something about the provenance of the cask and the fact that maybe a lot of whiskey makers don't really understand the casks that they're using, especially with the amount of people using wine casks now. So I've got Ken Forrester coming on, Olivier Humbrecht coming on to talk about that. And, I didn't just want it to be spirit people, whiskey people anymore. I think it's really important to bring in other disciplines, because then we all learn, not just the kind of consumer, but also the producer learn. Because I think that it's really, really important to go cross-discipline now, more so than ever. We need each other more than we've ever needed each other before. And I think that cross-discipline has to come together, because the only way we're going to survive this and move forward and be stronger is as a complete drinks industry, not as a spirit industry or a wine industry or a bar industry or a retail industry. We have to be the drinks industry and the hospitality industry, and that is the way we're going to beat this, because together we're much more stronger than we are as a single unit.
Totally. And I think really the kind of the last theme, and it does, as I guess it happens with us, it really does, I think, flow nicely from what you've said. And one of the things that I would like people to kind of take away from this is maybe something for people who are working in hospitality, maybe who are working in wine, maybe working in service, and I think for those roles, there is an insane amount of uncertainty around at the moment, I think, and this potential, who knows what's coming further down in the year, and a whole industry basically that's potentially under threat, from so many different forces and none of which are of their making, which is the real shame, really, I think, of any of this. So I think the way I want to ask this is kind of a little bit of a meta way, and it's almost, imagine you were speaking to, I guess, Boxwood Dawn or Zuma Dawn, and that she, but the 2020 version, the September 2020 version, knowing what now and having had that experience, I guess, on the on the spirit side, and you know, obviously having a different perspective on the wider industry. You know, do you think there are things that you would tell, you know, Zuma Dawn now, and you know, what advice might you give her to kind of, I guess, hedge potentially, or at least make some kind of insurance, you know, against what is a, you know, a potentially, you know, shrinking workforce or a shrinking industry?
It's super, super hard right now. And, you know, I'm looking around and some of my dearest friends are struggling in terms of money and in terms of what they can do. And you know, I think it's going back to this thing, we're in it together. You know, reach out. The most important thing we can do right now, because a lot of people are struggling with depression, a lot of people are struggling with uncertainty. You know, we are there as an industry to help you. You know, reach out to us. We've got Creators Trust, which is doing amazing work. You know, we've been trying to raise a lot of money for them. Your industry cares. You know, there are people that care, and reach out. You know, if anyone needs to reach out to me, please reach out. You know, I'm on Instagram under Dawn Davies MW. Facebook is more personal, but, you know, you can find me on email. You know, I don't know if I have any answers, because I think we are in a time that is so uncertain. What I would say is we have to be really, really careful as employers that we do not abuse these staff. Because we're cutting wages, we're cutting shifts. You know, this is not an excuse for these businesses to make money. You know, if that's your employer, then we need to stand up to that as an industry together and ensure that, you know, people are being treated fairly and not being treated as slaves. You know, that we cannot go backwards. We've done so much work in the industry on trying to protect our staff that, you know, I feel that now this is maybe an opportunity for some of the lesser scrupulous businesses to really mistreat their staff and overwork their staff. And, you know, I think that's something that we need to be super careful about. And we, as an industry, we have to stand up to these bullies. You know, same with kind of, you know, looking at just being simple with yourself, you know, save your money, be careful. If you're in a job, save, don't think that this is gonna, you know, you're gonna be in that job. There's so much uncertainty. You know, my father always taught me to save, always taught me to put something away. And that stood me in good stead when I've had problems in work and things like that. And I think we don't do enough of that. I think we're not careful enough. We go out and it's like, woohoo, you know. And it's just maybe simple things, you know, reach. But the biggest thing I would say is if you're unhappy, if you're sad, if you're scared, reach out, because you have, you know, there's so many people that are there for you, whether it's your friends or your family or your, you know, the industry as a whole. You know, really, really don't be afraid to kind of go out there and ask for help, because it's in asking for help. There's nothing wrong in asking for help. And I think that would be my biggest thing.
Yeah. Brilliant. No, thank you so much. Yeah, I did want to ask that, because I think that there is obviously, yeah, there is a lot of uncertainty, but no one knows, and I thought that was kind of the fairest way to ask it, you know, like what advice would you give yourself? But I think your message is very clear there. You know, it's like you're not alone. You know, reach out, and I think that's really important, isn't it? You know, is when you do have that overwhelm, you know, not to just let that place, you know, whether that's your home or that's your work, let that sort of be your kind of jail, you know, and that just to be your world, and it's like, you know, I think that having those conversations can give people perspective, you know, and I think that's I think it's going to be increasingly important, you know, as we sort of go on down the line. So I do genuinely think that's a positive message to end on. But as an addendum, I'd also like to ask you about the auction that we spoke about last time, because we didn't cover that. So, you know, what happened there? Because it seemed as though there was so much goodwill. People from all sides of hospitality sort of rallied together. So yeah, just sort of let us know what the hell happened with that auction that was, again, organized at, I think, fairly short notice, but again, totally nailed it.
Another one that was short notice. I think my life works on short notice. No, it was amazing. We raised over 100K for Drinks Trust. Super proud team here and all of the amazing people that donated. And then we went on and did a further, I think, three auctions with various other kind of organizations to raise money. And I don't know what the total stands to date, but it's been really, really successful. And, you know, I think we couldn't have asked for better support from both our consumers and our suppliers and the people in the industry. You know, I got my bottle. Ryan Chetty and the guys at White Lion and Dandelion did a bottling. And I was like, I'm having that bottle. I am going after it. I don't care how much I have to bid. That's mine. So I'm looking forward to opening it when I can physically be with him and Ian because I miss them dearly. And yeah, it will be nice to open that and celebrate together when we're allowed.
As ever, a huge thank you to you, Dawn, for taking part in the summit. I'm so happy about all the innovations that you're doing and felt able to share with me on the show. And I think it will be super interesting to see how the whiskey show plays out when it starts next week. I have, of course, left below all the links and main social media handles for both the whiskey show and the whiskey exchange. And of course, if you're listening on the Interpreting Wine website, do check below for the PDF, which includes key takeaways and the full transcript of the conversation. It's only left for me to say a huge thank you to everybody who's appeared on the inaugural Interpreting Wine Hospitality Summit 2020. I've really enjoyed this format, and it's something I'll be looking to evolve in the future. I really think that the format could work for exploring a particular region or country, and I'd definitely be open to discussing the idea with brands or regional bodies. If you personally found the talks enlightening and you've taken something from the summit, I would massively appreciate you leaving a review on iTunes. This will help for other people to find the summit and will help to amplify the voices of these fantastic seven sessions. And if you know of anybody you think might benefit from these sessions, do be sure to share with them the website interpretingwine.com/summit. where they can sign up for full access to the summit and revisit these talks whenever they want to. It's only left for me to thank you for listening and to invite you to connect with me on social media, where I'm at Interpreting Wine on Instagram and Facebook, at Wine Podcast on Twitter, or email hello@interpretingwine.com. See you next time.